Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. A week from today, the conversation will have changed forever. The Dakota Political Junkies continue to provide thoughtful commentary on the most compelling political stories in the state and sometimes the nation. Today, political junkie Denise Ross joins us from Rapid City. Denise, welcome back to Midday.
It's great to be with you, Lori.
Let's start out with some financial disclosures, the finance reports. What do we know today that we didn't know last week, and why do we know it the week before the election?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I think we owe it to some just diligent political reporters who know how to navigate the new campaign financing system on the Secretary of State's website, because I have been trying to do that this morning. And under the old system, you could scroll through and see the names of all of the campaign committees. Now they have a search bar that if you know the name of your committee, you can enter it and see their reports. But if you don't, that leaves you kind of flailing about. So there's a wealth of information for people who run campaigns and have to turn the reports in, and lots of good guidance there. But if you're a voter and you want to see the reports, I would say the transparency is less under the new system than it was. I think Secretary of State Chantel Krebs, you know, is doing a good job and wants to do a good job. So hopefully more transparency will be on her list for the future, because it was easier to find the information in the past.
So some adjustments perhaps will be made.
Let's hope, yeah.
So before we get too into what we know, what's the significance of where the money comes from? Why, you know, why should voters really care?
Well, and that's the significance is directly related to do the voters care. And I think they take it into the mix. Where does the money come from? I think that's an important piece of information for voters to have. And you want to know, is this coming from one rich guy, which in the case of one of our ballot measures it is? Is this coming from a lot of small donors? Is this, you know, where is the money coming from? And more importantly, who's so motivated to promote one issue or another issue that they're willing to get out their checkbook and write a check to get it passed into law? And so that's always, you know, a nuanced conversation. It's different with every ballot measure, every campaign. So I do think it's really, really important information, and I'm glad we know at least what we do know now.
What are some of the highlights of what you've been able to figure out as you sort through what other reporters are doing and what you've been able to dig up on your own?
Yeah, well, so there's the kind of the high-profile ballot measures have emerged as one is this Marcy's Law, which seeks to change our state constitution, which I think that's another piece of information. And that's a pretty, you're looking at the gravity of a decision, changing the constitution is a much more significant move, much more permanent move than simply changing the state statutes, which would be easier for voters to come down the road in the future and tweak, for future legislators possibly even tweak. Changing the constitution is pretty permanent, but but having said that, there's a billionaire in California whose sister was a victim of a crime. I can't remember. I think she was killed. And he wants to have it so that crime victims get notified and their, you know, their families, and in some cases their extended families. And you've seen, you know, they get notified whenever anything's happening with the perpetrator and through, as that person moves through the criminal justice system. You've seen defense lawyers, even the victims' rights advocates in the state, some of them, and prosecutors and judges come out and say, this just goes way too far. It's unwieldy. We can't possibly notify everybody's grandmother and cousin. And then you've seen the pushback from the other side saying, no, that's not what it would mean. I don't think it's clear if you read the language what it would mean. It says, you know, some of these extended family members, but it doesn't spell out in great detail how this would work. So
how does it
there's a lot of apprehension within the system about what they would do if this thing were to pass.
And what it would cost then, too, in a state's attorney's office, for example, to really how to implement it is what I'm hearing is just sort of the challenges of that as well. And redefining.
Right, and there are victims' rights laws already on the books. And so the question is, do you need more? And then if you do need more, then how much more you really need? And I don't know. I haven't seen any polling on this question. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see what the voters decide.
But $1.2 million from a single a single individual to support Constitutional Amendment S. Seems significant.
That's what the Argus Leader reported, and I believe them. So that's a lot of money in a South Dakota election, maybe not in a California election, but in South Dakota it is, and you've seen ads on TV, and it's paid for a staffer, Jason Gloat, who's well-known in Republican circles, has worked in Republican politics for a long time in South Dakota, so I'm sure he didn't come cheap. And So it's been a very well-coordinated and paid-for effort.
So it can pay for staff. It can also pay for those ads. Are you getting I got a phone call last night from a cheerleader. she had been a state award or state champion cheerleader from Roosevelt High School, and now she was a cheerleader at SDSU, and she was pro her amendment. And I was just standing there trying to make the connection between cheerleading and the amendment she was supporting. But it was an interesting phone call. What kind of calls are you getting?
I haven't been. We typically stick to our cell phones in our household.
Oh, so I have a landline. I've outed myself as having a landline still now.
We have interest. My husband is a registered Republican, so we've gotten some very interesting phone calls in mail from Donald Trump, which always excites my first and second grader that we got a call from Donald Trump. But we figured he had enough of his own money. But that's about all that I can think of that we've gotten in our house, other than the mailers, which I think everybody else has gotten,
right,
too.
Any other significant contributions here that we want to talk about? We kind of covered Marcy Law. Where is some of the other money coming from out of state, and where is it funneling into?
Yeah, and the other sort of high profile, this is sort of a triptych of ballot measures, proposing to reform ethics and transparency and some of the ways the elections are done, and it's come up, the cute slogan that they came up with was TV22, that changes the channel, TV22, because there are so many ballot measures. And I sat down with my 91-year-old grandmother a couple weeks ago with her sample ballot, trying to sort through all of them, and we both had a headache at the end of that. There's amendment or initiative or referendum T and V and then 22 that go together. And one of them is for nonpartisan elections. So sort of like Nebraska does it, no Republican or Democrat. There's one that's just a basket full of ethics commission reforms. People would get credits to donate to their favorite candidates for like the state house. It just all goes together. And coming primarily from there's a group in Massachusetts, and I believe I read about another group in New York. They're kind of lining up between those three, picking their favorite one to push. And I think that's going to be a very interesting thing. You're seeing, this whole election has been about change and the elite establishment in the country, and you're seeing some of the elite establishment in South Dakota, which, because we are such a red state, is primarily the Republican Party sort of organization, just kicking and screaming. And I've heard of personal confrontation over this issue from people who've chosen to support some of these ballot measures. And so I think this has got the elites, or how the stalwarts, sort of really, really worried.
And I've seen some pretty, I wouldn't say, in confrontations, but some, pretty intense conversations on Facebook of people posting back and forth about these. So Constitutional Amendment T, if you haven't kept up with the TV22, T is a redistricting measure, sort of an anti-gerrymandering, if you will. Constitutional Amendment V is the nonpartisan election Denise mentioned, and then the 22 is the initiated measure 22, right, which includes, and that's a bipartisan, Rick Wyland and Don Frankenfeld sort of began that conversation, but a lot of that money is also coming from out of state to support it. Do you know if, when you look at that money, Denise, do you have an idea if they're not raising a lot of local money, does that mean that there's not a lot of local support, or is that too far of a leap to make when you look at the dollars?
Well, and I looked, and again, this is from the Argus Leader reporting, but it looks like about half of the money for at least one of these measures did come from within South Dakota, and then about half from, if I read that right, half from this other group. But I think it's entirely was kickstarted and organized with the money from this out-of-state organization. But then I think as the Met, you know, they enlisted some South Dakota political operatives to kind of get the ball rolling, and they spread their message kind of so for a long time, kind of underground, kind of just, you know, speaking to small groups, and which is a very effective way to do things in South Dakota, going door to door downtowns and whatnot. But I think the electorate in South Dakota, and as we've seen nationwide, is kind of ready for some changes to our political system. So I think their timing might be very good for their issue. I think there's some appeal to voters who are fed up with a lot of things, and that could spill over into our election, where it might not have if we'd had a more traditional national race and there wasn't all this restiveness on both, frankly, the Republican side and the Democratic side.
And I'm curious to see if those three, the TV 22, if they all rise or fall together on Election Day, if their numbers match up and people really were all in, or if they took their pet measure and voted yes and voted against the others. So it'll be fun to watch. So you talk about sort of state Democrats. Let's switch gears a little bit, and state Democrats are getting serious about the voting records of Republican incumbents when it comes to teacher pay votes that we just went through. Some of those flyers are coming out saying you need to, you know, be accountable now for how you handled the situation. What do you know there?
Yeah. Well, so this was my take after I went to the Cracker Barrel sessions here in Rapid City during the legislature, and I've listened to the radio ads here in town. And so I think we have a very distinct difference in Sioux Falls and Rapid City in that the Republicans in Sioux Falls are trying to posture themselves as they did vote to support teacher pay. That is not the case out here in Rapid City as far as I can tell. The biggest arguments during the Cracker Barrel was, why are you supporting this, you know, tax and spend plan by Governor Dugard, who was not always spoken of so kindly during those Cracker Barrel sessions? And now you're hearing radio ads from candidates who talk about the need to roll back tax increases and live within our means, like a family budget and that kind of thing. So it's an interesting dichotomy to me to see the mood in Sioux Falls versus the mood in Rapid City. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the public polling at the time was overwhelming in support of the teacher pay increase. So I'm not sure if that has changed out here in the West, or if perhaps they're just, some of these folks are just so committed to that issue and gaining more traction in the legislature to try and push back on it, that they're just still pushing that message. I don't know what's motivating that, but it is a different message out here for sure.
That will be another interesting sort of thing to watch. And then this morning, Denise, I sent you an article. I don't know if you got a chance to read it, from USA Today, and it's an article from Susan Page talking about the future of women in politics after this year, asking the question, will we ever see two white men on a ticket again? And I thought, well, we got to talk to Denise about that.
Yes, well, of course, I know. I don't know. But
has the entire conversation changed?
I think so. So without betraying any of my personal friends or family members, about a month ago, I got an inkling from somebody who has voted Republican for decades, had some questions for me about different things, and said, I'm voting Democrat. And then she was talking about the top of the ticket. I'm changing. And she said, I've been a Republican and I'm not anymore. And I was floored. I just never expected this, but she was adamant. And then to a lesser degree, a couple of other women, baby boomers and up, who are finding different reasons not to support Donald Trump, whether it's the fact that he hasn't paid taxes. They're not necessarily keying in on some of the more offensive comments he's made about women. They're keying in on some other issues. Don't like the fact that he's not paid taxes. I don't like this. I don't like that. And they don't come right out and say they're not voting for him, but the message is coming through to me that, like, they want to know, can I vote for Evan McMullen, this guy in Utah, which incidentally, no, in South Dakota you can't. I saw Tom Brokaw on TV the other day who said he checked into this in South Dakota, and it's illegal in South Dakota to write somebody in. So he thought that was not good. So people are looking for ways around voting for Trump without necessarily voting for Hillary. And then I've talked to a couple who are just like, I'm voting for Hillary. And so I think my big curiosity is watching on election night to see if this is just a smattering of women, or if this is going to maybe be a tide that really surprises people on election night.
I'm suspecting that we are going to talk about that for a long time to come, one way or the other, no matter what happens on election night. That conversation's not going away.
No, I don't think so.
Well, I look forward to having that conversation with you again. Denise Ross is a Dakota political junkie from Rapid City. Thanks for joining us today, Denise.
Thank you.